ministry of the Bible Church of Brownsburg. The teacher for this morning's message is Fred Klein.
Potentially some other people coming within the next 15 or 20 minutes. And so it may be important for you to help them know where we are, because we're going to get in the middle of an exercise pretty quick. And so I'm going to ask you to work hard today. We're going to have to work fairly quickly. So please try to hang in there. So we're in the book of Hebrews. We are in chapter 11, the great faith chapter. And last week, we studied the faith of the patriarchs. Remember, the first time I was in chapter 11, I gave you a 30,000-foot flyover to help you understand how the whole chapter fits within the argument that the author's making. So I'm not going to repeat all that today, just so we have plenty of time for our exercise. But when we get to Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it men of old gained approval." And last week we looked at the faith of the antediluvians, and the other words, the people that lived prior to the flood. And the point last week we were making is that our faith is not a blind faith. What the faith we're talking here is based on evidence, and the evidence that we base our faith on is revelation that God has given us. And so we were looking at that. And so as we now move into the next segment that we're going to look at, the faith of the patriarchs, it's the same way, but the evidence that the revelation is very clear, because it says so, and it has to do with the promise that was given to Abraham. And so these, as we think about the context of the letter, these faith examples and the principles we're looking at would have encouraged the members of the church of the Hebrews to which the letter of the Hebrews was written, to persevere with Christ, because they were evidently enduring some hardship, had endured hardship, and were getting ready to endure more. And they were tempted to go back to Judaism, but the point of the letter is for them to draw near to God and to stay with Christ, to persevere with Him. And so as we look at these faith examples from the time of the patriarchs, we're going to see how that they were believing that God when He gave this promise. So you'd have to literally study Genesis chapter 12 all the way through Genesis chapter 50 in order to see all these promises elaborated. I mean, it is throughout all of that. But the very first time that the promise is mentioned is when Abram was called to leave his country before he became called out. It says in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, it says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and so shall you be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." Now, I just want to—I always have to point this out for those living in modern times. This hasn't been repealed. This is still in effect. And if you want to bring God's curses on you, just be a nation that curses Israel, because I think this is still in power. And so it's those who bless you will be blessed; those who curse you will be cursed. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. And in that we see the promised Redeemer that will come through this called out person. There was nothing of merit that would cause God to call Abraham over anybody else. It was strictly for the display His grace. And we see that in other passages in Scripture that we don't have time to go into. But in this promise, there was a promise. There were kind of four pieces. There was land, there was descendants, and so many descendants, they would become a great nation. There was blessing, great blessing, so peace, and then a promised Redeemer in which all the families of the earth will be blessed. And again, the promise then was repeated, elaborated, and explained to Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Jacob. Especially, we saw that in Genesis chapter 15, 17, and 18. So with that, so last week's table, I started off with what was the revelation, because it wasn't as clear, and that was important for you to understand that faith, our faith is not a blind faith. It is a faith that's based on what God said. And you have to not only, and then last week we also said, it says that by, hi Steve, long time no see. It says that those who bless and believe God is, and he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And we're going to see that, you know, without faith it's impossible to please him, because you must believe that God is, and he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And so this idea of those, you must believe that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him, is that you see him as a faithful, trustworthy God. And so part of our exercise today is to say, what would you have to believe about God to do these faith actions that we're going to be digging out? And so again, the revelation on which these faith actions are based is the promise. And so I've listed that here for you, but in our exercise, so you don't need to fill that, we won't need to fill that in, but I've created a new table. So flip the page, and we'll get started, and I'll give you instructions, so don't start yet. So we have six different passages. Each passage starts out by faith, is the beginning of the each passage. So I just, we're going to take each one that comes up. We have to work fairly quickly. We have six of them to get through. I told you I was going to pick up the pace here toward the end, because we are going to finish before summer. And so so we are not going to go back and reteach and go through Genesis chapter 12 through 50, you know, so which would take weeks and weeks and weeks, and perhaps a year in itself. So we're not doing that. And so I'm trusting that you have some familiarity with the stories in Genesis 12 through 50. If you don't, you're going to be a little bit, have to rely on your teammates here. But what we're going to do, I think we'll have each person work as an individual through each of these tables, and then we'll have group discussion at the end to draw out the major application questions. And so we're going to do them one at a time, and I'm going to then ask you for your answers after each one. So I'll read the passage. So we're going to give, for an example, I'll start off with Hebrews 11, 8. And then your job as an individual is to get your pencil out and fill in what is the faith action, what was hidden or unseen, and what hardship was endured. Now, each of these boxes, you may not necessarily be able to pull out of the text each of those boxes, but you should be able to use your common sense and judgment to put something in there. So it doesn't have to be a verbatim right out of the passage. It needs to be, What are you seeing? So you don't need to fill in lots and lots and lots of words. It should be a couple, two, three, four words, five, you know. For some of you, it's going to take 10, but it shouldn't be a large amount of words. You don't have to quote the text exactly and include all of it. Okay, now let's work through. And then, after each one, I will say, what is revealed in this example about what they believed about God? And we'll just have a group discussion. And we need to move fairly quickly. And so I'm going to keep this going short. So I'm going to read the verse, and then I'm going to give you about 3 minutes to work as an individual to fill in those blanks, and then we will talk about it. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. So you fill in what is the faith action, what was hidden or unseen, because our faith is that we believe that there is something that you can't observe because you're just relying on what God said. And then what hardship did they endure? Let's just work through this one just together. What was the faith action? Somebody shouted out. He obeyed by going. So, you know, and this is a point where we need to just drive. This is something the author's driving home. Obedience and faith and trust are inextricably linked. You don't obey somebody you don't trust. And the more you trust somebody, the more you're willing to obey them. And then when they ask you to do something which sounds crazy to you, you still obey because you trust that. Trust him. Okay, so what was hidden or unseen was where he was going. Yeah, he hadn't ever been there. He was being asked to go somewhere he had never been. He didn't know if the people were friendly or mean. He didn't know anything. He just was told to go, and he went. And so what was not seen was he had never seen the promised land before. He had never been away that far away from home. And so what hardship did he endure? Right. And that wasn't expressly written here, but it was back in Genesis. He had to leave his family and his culture and his people. And so he was going somewhere elsewhere. He had to leave all that behind. And his whole safety net. If anything happens, you know, it's nice to have family around, isn't it? Or people that you know. Now, let's say then, what is revealed in this example about what they believed, or in this case, Abraham believed about God and his character by leaving his family and going? He trusted God, okay. Yep, God would fulfill his promise. Absolutely. And that's, I think, a key thing, that God had the authority to give it. You know, it was his, and he had the authority to do it. And so God has the authority to make promises and the faithfulness to keep them. Okay, now, does everybody understand what we're doing now? Okay, so now the next one you'll do by yourself, and then we'll do a similar discussion together. And so we go on then, Hebrews chapter 11, verses 9 through 10. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. So in this, let's go to this table over here. What was the faith action? Yeah, he lived like E.T., Alf, or my favorite Martian, right? Yeah, no. He lived as an alien, or aliens usually wanted people. Do most cultures like aliens? No, he lived as a guy that wasn't liked in a foreign land. Okay, yeah, Steve. Yeah, so if you go back to the context, I think you're making a good point, and we could include that too. But as you think about that, he lived, I think, is the faith action here, because the people that the letter was written to were thinking about going back, and the whole point is he persevered, and so the faith action is perseverance. Okay, if you want to put another word to it, and then in a couple of sections we'll come back to that idea of perseverance. But you could also say he looked for is a faith. But over here I also have motivating hope. Steve, look over on my table, motivating hope. A common thread throughout all of these is that every time a motivating hope was listed in the verse. And I just didn't have you fill that out because of time. But, you know, and when we get to the greatest example of all of these faith examples was Jesus. And what does it say about him? He endured the cross. What did he have his eyes fixed on? He fixed his eyes on the glory that was to come, and he endured the cross, despising his shame. And so we are to fix our eyes on Jesus. And this is the theme that's now starting to come out. And I do want you to see that, is that our hope helps us get through hard times. But the faith action here is that they didn't see. It was their hope, that their faith, their trust in God and his promise that made them have hope. And hope then was what they fixed their minds on as they were persevering. And so their faith action was the perseverance. All right, now, what was hidden or unseen? Yeah, so it says he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And here, this commentary that the writer Hebrews is providing is giving us that Abraham was probably more than you see in Genesis here, but that it was talking about a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And so, first of all, it is not a man-made city. And the second thing, it has foundations made by God, which, because of God, he's righteous, and those foundations would be unmovable or unshakable. And so it would be a righteous place to live that would never change, that you'd never be threatened by another enemy, you'd never be threatened by famine, you'd never be threatened by hate. You would be in an unmovable, righteous thing prepared by God. Now, what was hardship endured? Yeah, and being foreign. Living as an unwanted foreigner in a tent. That was the hardship. He's so living as an unwanted nomad. So what is revealed in this example about what they believed about God and his character? Yes, they believed that he was trustworthy enough to fulfill the promise. And that promise would include a stable, righteous environment. And does that reflect on God's goodness? Okay, so that he's a good God that's going to provide something that's really neat. That's not only going to get land, but it's going to also have a city. And that city is going to be stable and righteous. And so it's a goodness of God. All right, is everybody tracking with the exercise so far? All right. We got to keep on trucking then. Let's go on to verses 11 and 12. By faith, even Sarah herself received... Now, this is a verse, by the way, that's very difficult for interpreters to interpret, but I think the NASB here, which we have, is a good interpretation. And so we're going to run with that. I'm not going to go into all the different ways you can see this, because it's basically saying, is this really talking about only Abraham, or is it talking about Abraham and Sarah? I came to the conclusion this is a good interpretation because it takes two to tango. And so I think that this is a good interpretation, so we're going to go with that at face value. Do you guys understand what I mean? All right. So it says, by faith even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful, that's God, who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the star of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. Now, the reason people have to struggle with this, because Sarah's response back in Genesis didn't sound like it was full of faith. But that's, I think it does, if you look at the whole thing, not just the first time she heard the idea. Okay, so work on that one. Okay, this table here, what was the, why don't you help me? What was the faith action you saw? Trying to conceive a baby, yeah. What was hidden or unseen? Yeah, but beyond, just trying to go back to the faith action was trying to conceive a baby. What was hidden or unseen about this particular couple? They were really old. They were older than Steve Hammond. I mean, they were old. They were past their childbearing years a lot. Now, what else did you know about... Yeah, she was 90, he was 99. Yep, yep. So what was another hardship they endured?
The waiting.
Yeah, years and years and years and years of barrenness. They'd been married a long time. They didn't move to God didn't call Abraham until he was 75 years old. They'd been married before that. I mean, she had been looking for some kind of a child for a long, long time. And they tried it, the do-it-yourself plan with Hagar, and that didn't work. God didn't accept that because he made it clear that it was going to be through this couple. So, what is revealed in this example about what they believed about God and his character? He could be trusted to fulfill his promise about the nation that was to come out of the descendants. And what does that take? How can... A being like God, how can he make that happen with people that, when they look at themselves, say, I'm worn out and old, and all my parts don't work anymore? What?
He's the giver of life.
He's giver of life. He's powerful. He is the one that is the creator, God. He has the power to do it. I think there's one other thing you'll never get, I don't think, unless I say it. So I'm just going to go ahead so that we don't struggle. I think that this is an instance where it helps us understand that God sees a man and a wife as one flesh. And because it wasn't with Abraham and Hagar, it had to be Abraham and Sarah. And because of the promise was to come out of that one man, this nation, it was that one man and his one wife that were one flesh. And as God... helps us understand what a marriage is. Okay, let's then go on. And then it says in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 13 through 16, it says, all these. Now, all these don't go all the way back and include the antediluvians. All these are talking about who he just had talked about, which was Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Jacob, these patriarchs, because they were just mentioned in a previous passage. All these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on earth. Now, for verse 14, for those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Now, I just want to point out before you get started that they would have had an opportunity to return. And in fact, Abraham was just adamant that they not seek a wife, or that Isaac would never be go back to get a wife from home. It would be the servant that went back and got that wife because they didn't want to return. He was adamant that they were not going back. And so this, how does this relate to this church of the Hebrew people that the letter was written to? Totally, doesn't it? Because they want to go back to Judaism, didn't they? And so there is just completely relating here that they had an opportunity to go back, but they didn't want to. And back in Genesis, you can see they did not want to go back. Now, go ahead and work on this, and then we will talk about it. Okay, let's have this table over here help try to be that take the point on this one. There were more than one faith action, but what were the faith actions you had? Okay. Mm-hmm. So they had their hope fixed on that promise. Okay. They did not turn back. Very important. And that is very related to the people that are reading this letter. What else? This is one that's similar to one we've had earlier. They persevered. They lived in a foreign land, right? Okay. So that perseverance. Now, what was hidden or unseen? So there were four elements on the first page that I talked about in the promise. Did they get possession of the land? Nope. Did they have the blessing of God on them? Not really. Not like it was promised. Yet, did they have descendants as numerous as the sand on the seashore and the stars in the sky? No, they did not. I mean, Abraham and Sarah, they had one kid. And then the promised Redeemer, of course, had not yet come. But what else was hidden and unseen? Yeah, a heavenly country. And so this introduces a different idea that Abraham was not just seeing this in a sense of having an earthly land in a sinful world, but a heavenly, righteous home that God would provide at some point in time. And so this gives us a little bit more idea about the revelation that he must have had, or at least understanding of it. And so the heavenly country means not of this earth, heavenly. What else? And people who think such things get what? Because God has prepared. He's prepared a city for them, right? And that goes back to the trying. I am trying. Yes, right. God's righteous and unmovable and unshakable city. That we'd also already touched on. What was hidden or unseen? A nation of descendants, heavenly country, and this unmovable, unshakable city. And what hardship did they endure? Well, they lived as an unwanted nomad, a stranger, an exile. Now, how did they live as an exile? Did all of these patriarchs, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Jacob, all live in the promised land when they died? No, where did Jacob live? Egypt. As an exile he didn't even get to stay as a nomad in Canaan. He died in Egypt, and so he therefore was an exile. So add that to the list. What is revealed in this example about what they believed about God and his character? And we're going to start repeating some things, aren't we? Seeing some themes. It is a sinless, righteous, stable land and city, in a heavenly one that God is in charge of. Okay, and what kind of God would provide that? A good God. You don't trust somebody and obey them because you think they're mean and going to try to hurt you. They trusted and obeyed. Obedience is totally linked to trust. And trust is linked to what you think about the person. And they're showing by their actions that they really believe God was good. It is like he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Okay, let's move on then. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 17 through 19. By faith, and so whenever we get into our own situations in our own lives, when hardships come along and you start to say, what kind of God would do that? And you know, you're mad at God because of some reason or another about something that's going on. That's not a good path to go down. Because these people, one of the primary things that motivated them to obey was their faith in God's goodness and his trustworthiness. And so when bad things happen, we need to fix our eyes on Jesus and the hope that he's promised us, not on the circumstances that are around us. And we need to make sure that we don't allow ourselves, and we need to rehearse how good the Lord is and go back to the scriptures that help us understand about his character and who he is. He is a good God. All right, verses 17 through 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. So work on that for a little bit. Okay, I'm going to look over to you guys this time to kind of take the point. What was the faith action here? Offering up Isaac, yeah. The only begotten son, yep. Offered up Isaac. And what was hidden or unseen? Right, how? Because God had promised it was going to be through that boy that the nation would come, but yet he's asking him to offer. And so the hidden thing is, well, how's God going to work this out? You know, he didn't know. I've never seen that done before. And so what hardship was endured? Oh, yeah. I mean, he loved this boy. It was on this boy's shoulders. All the hope was there of the all the promise that that Abraham received, of this promised Redeemer, great nation. All was pinned on this one kid. And God was asking him to sacrifice this one boy. But he received him back as a type. And so what does this help us then see about God? He received him back as a type. Type of what? Christ. So what does that help us see about God? Yeah, that God can be trusted even when we don't understand. What did you say? I couldn't hear. This sound good enough? Okay. But specifically about receiving back as a type, what does that tell us about God? Yeah, it was what God was going to go through with his only begotten son. You know, that God loved his son. The love we see that Abraham had to struggle with is a type of what God had to do. Our salvation was, he loved us so much that he did this unbelievably painful thing with his own son, Jesus. And so that is one thing we see. God is self-sacrificial, that he loved us that much. What else do you see that God is about God here? Anything?
He has the power.
Yes. He could, and Abraham can believe that God had the power to raise him from the dead. And so he believed God was a powerful God. And so God was to be trusted, even though you can't, in times when you can't understand what God's doing, that he trusted him so much, even when it didn't make sense, he still believed God was good and God was powerful enough to make it all work out. Okay, and so are there times when we don't understand what God's up to? All the time, right? Other things people say is that when the critics will go, well, you know, how did the guy, writer of Hebrews, know that Abraham would receive him back, that God might raise him from the dead? If you go back to Genesis, it says that he told the servant, stay here, we're coming back. He believed they were coming back. He was going to obey, but he didn't know how, but he knew that they were both coming back. And so you see that faith even there. So God is trustworthy even when we do not understand, when we can't reconcile things. We need to still trust him. When things seem to be at odds with each other, we still need to trust. All right, now let's go on to the last one. We're looking at now the three people, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Now, Esau's mentioned, but he's not a person of focus here. He was not a faithful person. We're going to hit Esau later in Hebrews. There's a whole part about Esau, and he's called godless Esau there, so to give you a hint. So it says, by faith Isaac, this is verse 20 through 22, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob, okay, when did he do that? At the end of his life, and Esau, even regarding things to come. By faith Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph in worship, leaning on top of his staff, or some people think the top of his bedpost. And then by faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. And so just realize that all three of these people, I'm lumping them together, but they were the issue that they're talking about is what they were doing at the very, very end of their life when they were dying. Okay, so work on that for a second. Okay, I'll just open this up to all the tables, to anybody that wants to chime in on any of these, go right ahead. What was the faith action that you saw here? There were a couple of them. Yeah, they believed that God was trustworthy enough that they were making sure that they were passing it on to their next generation kids. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, do we believe that God is trustworthy enough that we invest in our own children? And we do. Because it's important, if you really believe something, you really believe there is a God, and he was a rewarder of those who diligently seek him, you'd try to invest that into the next generation. Okay, what's one other thing about the end of their life? So all three were doing this as they were dying, these actions, and you hit on it with Joseph, but it's true the other two as well. They really believed this all the way until they died. And there's a truth here, and that is that those who are of faith, of genuine faith, will cling to that promise. They will not leave Jesus. They will not leave God all the way till they die, that we don't depart and leave him. They did. If we had time, and when we go through Genesis, because that's a book I'd like to go through, and in fact, I've got a person in mind that may be able to teach that at some point, but as we go through that book, it is amazing how much God does. He reveals about the failures of all of these people, and they were many and big, but yet the promise they didn't let go until they died, and so that is directly applicable to the people of the Hebrew that the letter of Hebrews written to, because they were thinking about leaving the faith, and those who are truly genuinely of the faith don't. They persevere until death. What is hidden or unseen here? And it's just, how is God going to provide this inheritance? You know, how's he going to do it? You know, where they ended up, Joseph down in Egypt, and Jacob too, but you know, they're down there. How is God going to pull this off? They don't know. But that's hidden. They just believed that he would, and he was powerful enough to do it, but they didn't know. So what hardship did Isaac go through? One of the big stories of the Bible had to do with Jacob and Esau. He was deceived by his son and his wife. That was one of the hardships, besides being an alien and a nomad. Yeah, that was pretty weird.
And then after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been pretty hard.
And just the living all of your life in anticipation of something,
yeah.
and never
actually realizing it. Yes, yes, indeed. What other hardship about, what about Joseph? You remember his story? He was sold as a slave, and down into Egypt. And then we read of all the miraculous things that happened to him to bring him to a point where he then saw how that his role was of God to save that nation. In a time of famine, and then Jacob, of course, being exiled to Egypt and having to go there at the end of his life. And so they all had hardship that they endured, and they kept going all the way till death. So then what is revealed about in its example about what they believed about God and his character? And so here we have only one new thing. And so let's focus only on it. You know, of course we have that God is trustworthy and he is going to deliver on his promises, which is the theme throughout. But there is a new thing here. And it has to do with Jacob, and it has to do with Joseph's sons. It has to do with Isaac and his two sons. Well, it could be for Joseph's two sons, but how about Isaac with Jacob and Esau in the blessing? Right. God is sovereign. God is sovereign. God's choice, because Isaac knew that's who God wanted was Jacob. Jacob and Jacob's mother deceived Isaac, and so when Isaac blessed Jacob, he thought he was blessing Esau. And from Isaac's point of view, he thought Esau was just the cat's meow. He loved Esau. Esau was a great hunter. He loved the meat that Esau would bring in. He thought that he would be the one from whom the nation would come and the Redeemer would come. Esau could care less. He was a godless man. Jacob tricked his dad into giving him the blessing, but then when that happened, he didn't reverse it because he saw God's sovereignty. And so God still can be trustworthy even though he is God. He is sovereign. He does what he wants to do. And yes.
And along that same line, yes. He's also so merciful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Jacob was a deceiver. Yeah. I mean, his whole life, that's the way he did things. So God, and that goes back to the theme that we were talking about just a second ago there, that God with these chosen people was still kind and merciful. He's a merciful God in spite of how they messed up. And aren't you glad that that's the kind of God that we worship? Because I know I mess up all the time. Now, let's summarize this thing with the faith principles then, and these examples. Faith, hope, and obedience flow from the belief in God's trustworthiness. God is trustworthy. He has the authority to make and fulfill promises. He has the power to make the impossible possible. He has the faithfulness to deliver on his promises. God can be trusted in his sovereignty. And then here's one that you have to get by looking at Abraham. Faith and trust grow when exercised through obedience. Do you think that Abraham at the very beginning could have sacrificed Isaac? No. It was a lifetime of following after God, of making mistakes, of trusting God, and building that trust that in God's goodness grew in his life. And so the life of faith and trust grow when we obey. And so what happens when we don't have the faith to obey? Can trust shrink? I think it can. Does that mean that you won't get, do you get to the point where you're not saved? No, it can get to the point where you don't know whether you're saved or not, because you can lose your assurance of salvation. You cannot lose your salvation. But if you want to be a person who trusts in faith in God, then the pathway there is it's inextricably linked with obedience. So believe what God says and do it. And it's just that simple. You don't have to understand how it's going to work out, because God, you just need to trust him and his goodness and remember about him. And then the second thing is that hope in God's promises motivates us in times of trial to persevere. And in all of these examples, we see the motivating hope that was out in front of them, that was in their mind, that kept them from going back to their country, that kept them, that caused them to keep on going when times got tough. And so with that, we end. I'm going to have to leave the application questions. We don't have time to do them. I was going to have group discussion, but I think that we're going to have to leave it there. A personal question for private reflection this day I would leave you with is your faith growing? Is your faith growing? And if it's not, obey. Are you tempted to go back? Then dwell on God, on the hope that we have, and on the goodness of who God is. Okay. Steve, we're so glad to have you back. Would you mind closing prayer today?
You have been listening to a message from the Bible Church of Brownsburg. For more information, please visit our website at www.bcb.church or call 317-852-7475.